begin this group meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problems and help other alcoholics to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Are there any other alcoholics present for this tonight? We welcome you. Are there any newcomers sober anywhere from 1 day to 3 months with us? Would you raise your hands, please? Thank you. You're particularly welcome. This meeting is devoted to a discussion of the principles of the AA program and how they work. Your leader will talk for as long as he chooses to talk, and then open it up for questions. He has some written questions, and then we'll open it up to the general meeting. And your leader tonight is Alan M.
My name is Alan McGinnis, and I am an American alcoholic. I thought I ought to say that because it's the 4th of July. But I'm not going to ask you to sing God Bless America. Would those of you who care to please join me in beginning the meeting by reciting our AA prayer? God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Those of you who have been at this meeting before that I have led, know that I'd like for you to think of it not as a meeting, but as a workshop, where you and I come here together, and we talk about this thing called alcoholism that we share, and what I have learned about it, what I have come to believe about it, and what you have come to believe about it, and things that you might want to know, questions that are in your mind. Because I saw there were so many newcomers' hands go up, I want to emphasize to you, and don't ever forget it, that nobody speaks officially for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, not even the founder. One of the most incredible things about this organization is that I can stand up here at a meeting like this and tell you things that I have come to believe with every fiber of my being. And yet you can sit out there in meetings like this, as I have done over the years, again and again and again, and disagree with every syllable I utter. And yet, both of us can be sober, both of us can be useful, constructive members, not only of Alcoholics Anonymous, but of society. So if anything I say bothers you, it shouldn't. You should just dismiss it. Anything I say you disagree with, you're quite entitled to. That's part of the game. And it was a long time for me to get this through my head, because I thought that if anything had to work, I came to this fellowship from a very authoritarian background, and I thought that if anything was going to work, if it was going to work for me, and I wasn't at all sure that I wanted it to, I would have to agree with everything that I heard. And I didn't have to be around very long before I discovered that these alcoholics were not only not agreeing with each other, they were seldom agreeing with themselves 2 days in a row. So I thought, well, this is going to be pretty bit difficult. So when I saw that that couldn't follow, then I took the next and much more inviting alternative of, if I couldn't agree with everything that I heard, then everybody else would have to agree with me. Now, as I said, this is an inviting alternative, and I pursued this for many years, until it finally dawned on me that if for some strange reason, it doesn't work that way in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think without any plan or any great genius design, what happened was the people who were forever and eternally living their lives on the basis of what does somebody else think, come into a fellowship where everybody tells them what they think. But it's always different. So somewhere along the line, you are forced to think to yourself. And that's the beginning of growing up. next to the final chapter in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'd like to read to you, because I wanted to set the tone for what we're going to be doing here for the next month. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. And what I would like to do for myself and for you and with you is in the coming months see if how you start to build a house that is in order and that you can ask others to come in and have a little shelter from the wind and the cold. And I'm going to try to do it by revealing in mind for you the questions that came to me after I came to this fellowship and that I had to answer. And I'd like to build these four talks around four questions. And the first question, take tonight, is, as far as I'm concerned, is the very heart and the crux of what we're doing here, why we're here tonight, and why we're not someplace else. I think it is the most, at once, and in the same breath, and in the same instant, the most promising question an alcoholic has ever asked himself, and I think it is also the most dangerous question he can ever ask himself. Because depending upon the answer to it, it largely shapes the future of his life. And the question is, what is the point of sobriety? Somewhere, sometime, if you haven't asked yourself that in those words, you will. Chances are you have done it long before you ever get here. And the reason you've done it, of course, you probably haven't used the word sobriety. It seemed to me that word never existed in my vocabulary until I had a 12-step call made on me on February the 6th, 1952. And it seemed to me I first heard that word. And I went into a state of shock. I was already in a pretty bad state of shock because I just didn't like that word. The minute I heard it, drunk as I was, it brought a vision to my mind that has only dimly faded over the years. And that was the vision of a person who is in the pink of health, but he is dead. So what you might have asked yourself before you got here is, what is the point of my staying sober? What's the point of staying sober? Now, why would you and I look upon the mere fact of staying sober as being something so wonderful that it should have some point to it? Well, I think it's because in our culture, maybe in everybody, but certainly the only one that I know anything about from firsthand in the American culture, sobriety is considered a virtue. Even on the part of non-alcoholics, abstaining from the fruit of the vine is often considered quite a thing to do. And so if it is virtuous to do this, then it follows as the ninth day that A, you have to be virtuous in order to do it, and B, you should get by God a reward for it. Now, by the time the alcoholic reaches AA, this question has been burning in his mind so hard, this virtue has been held up to him as one of being of such shining dominance over all others, that he wants something pretty big to happen if he goes along with this. Now, it would be wonderful if we all discussed this from the very beginning, but apparently somehow or other we don't get around to it. That's why I'm trying to discuss it with you tonight, because I think it's where it begins, it's where it stays, and finally, this is where it ends. If the alcoholic, when he gets here, sees no longer can he look upon this as a virtue, no matter how difficult it might be, or how many benefits he thinks is going to accrue from it. Because after he gets here, he finds out that what he has, this virtue, that he thinks is something that is done by choice, the lack of it on his part is a disease. When he isn't sober, he's sick. And he gets sicker and sicker and sicker the more he stays unsober. He's been testing it for quite a while. And he doesn't really believe the results most of the time. But I had no longer any quarrel with the results by the time I got here. So maybe I was in the minority. I don't know. I never stopped to figure out whether more people get here hating the fact that they're an alcoholic, or more people getting here kind of glad that they're an alcoholic. We hear that phrase later, you know, I am a grateful alcoholic, and the hair stands up on some people's head when they hear that. I wouldn't go through fingernail biting about whether or not I was an alcoholic at all. It just never even occurred to me to do this. By the time I got here, I and others had called myself so many other names with such deadly accuracy that the term alcoholic had a nice scientific sound. It sounded kind of upper class. In fact, it had a nice antiseptic ring to it. And so I didn't go through any of it. And then when they assured me that I had a disease, I never really paid any attention. It made no difference to me then. It makes no difference to me now that it's a disease. Because the way I felt, whatever it is, Buster, whatever label you want to put on it, whether you want to put some terrible stigma to it or some nice euphemism, whatever it is, I've got it. And I'm here not because I want to be, because others think I should be. Now, I was asking myself, what is the point of sobriety? Because I had started asking, not in those words. I was always saying, well, I will stay sober. And I think that's the way we generally come to this fellowship. Most of us, I think, fall into two groups. Wish that we said this out loud, and that's why I want to bring it out loud here tonight. Because this is the way it begins, and this is the way it fails a lot of times. The logic group, I think, says, I will stay sober if I get back. Now, they have been around for a while, and they have truths and acquired things. And they say that way down deep inside here, in the unconscious, where it really counts. They need to say this out loud, because if they said it out loud, it would sound too crass. But they say to themselves, I will stay sober if I get back. And then there is a long list, depending upon the circumstances and the background of the individual. You can supply your own from your background and your circumstances. But they can go, I will stay sober if I get back my wife, if I get back my husband, if I get back my job, if I get back the car, if I get back the kids, if I get back my health, if I get back my self-respect, if I get back my figure. On and on and on. Now, this has a very salutary effect. You can stay sober, start staying away from the first drink, and I'm going to let myself right now to tell you, I failed to define my terms, but because I want to forestall the tired old question that might come up of what is the difference between being dry and being sober. And I don't want to split any of these philosophical hairs with you. When I use the term sobriety, I am using it in the sense that it is the absence of any kind of chemical substance in your bloodstream that changes your thinking. That's what I'm talking about. You get liquid or solid, and whether you take it through the mouth, in the veins, or some other way that I haven't learned about. But that's what I mean by sobriety. It just isn't there. You're not taking it anymore. And it says, you don't go out in the corner and ponder whether you are dry or sober. You just don't have anything inside of you that is changing your thinking. No chemical that is changing your thinking. Now, as I said, when you make this statement to yourself that I will stay sober if I get back, and you have this long list that follows, a very salutary thing can follow you. A great progress is often made. Generally, old-timers look at these people and say, my God, look how they're growing, because they grow. Light comes into their eyes. They start making 12-step calls. Sobriety blossoms all over the place. And then one day, without any warning, there comes a day, an hour, that they suddenly find themselves kind of ticking it off, you know. I stayed sober to get back. And the things they stayed sober to get back either haven't gotten back, or now that they have gotten them back, they no longer want them. So what course do you take in that point? You say to yourself, what the hell's the point of sobriety? That's what you say. And there's no point to sobriety. If sobriety is going to be a means to an end, and the end hasn't been gotten, then there is no point to sobriety, so you dispense with it. Now that's one group. The smaller group, maybe it's growing, because they're coming in younger and younger and younger. A lot of them haven't been around long enough to acquire very much, to lose anything. Some of them haven't been around long enough to lose their baby back. But they're getting it here. And they say to themselves, I will stay sober if I get. And then their lips follow. If I get a husband, if I get a wife, if I get a job, if I get a Cadillac, if I get the contract. And they grow. They stay sober. Great things go on. Months pass. Years have passed. And then one day it's inventory time to them. And what they have stayed sober to get either hasn't gotten, or now that they have gotten it, it has not the value that they wanted. So they, in turn, say, what's the point of sobriety? And since they didn't get them what they wanted, then again it has no point, it has no value in itself at all. So it is dispensed with. The virtue was followed. The virtue was practiced. We were virtuous while we were practicing it. But we didn't get our reward. We didn't get our reward. Now, if you are an alcoholic, this is the most dangerous thinking that you can do. Because it will come this way again and again and again. And it so often comes to the newcomer this way because he comes in. We define alcoholism for him. We tell him that the physical part of this disease comes to a total dead stop if he stays away from the first drink. And generally there will be a great amount of resignation to that statement. I remember the first time I heard it, I thought, my God, why in the hell didn't I figure that out? Someone as burdened as I am, that's the way you stay sober. You stay away from the first drink. And that's exactly the way you do to work the physical part. AA has no great formula or magic little kind of thing that you do in order to stay away from the first drink. You just stay away from the first drink. Do anything else that you want to. You're a newcomer, and that you can still taste that drink in your mouth. And I say to you, there's only one way that you can stay sober, and that is to stay away from the first drink. And that is all you have got to remember. That is all you have got to remember. You see, I have done this several times before. That's why I'm dwelling on this thing tonight. I leave these meetings, and then 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I get a call. It's always nice to get a call at that hour. Generally, it's on the voice on the other end. It's kind of in the toward the end of the second act. We haven't gotten into the third act yet, where it's really going to get tragic. We're kind of toward the end of the second act. And it generally goes something like this. Al and I heard you talk, and I sure as hell like what you say about letting the tailgater pass. Would you tell me some more about that? And then we go on. Would you tell me some more about this? And finally I say, how long have you been sober? Oh, I haven't been sober. I'm drinking. But I sure like what you say. Well, you see, anything I say is just win, unless you're going to stay away from the first drink. That's the name of this thing. You don't come here to see me walk around with this thing hanging over my head and making up with a lot of nice things to send you out of here, saying, well, by God, that's pretty good, and then go down to the nearest bar or pick up a fist on your way home. That isn't what it's all about. We are here for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is we are going not to drink anymore. We are not going to pop pills anymore. We are not going to what do you do with pot? Smoke pot? I only did it once. I mean, they didn't call it pot then. They called it something else. So whatever it is that you do with these different things, you ain't going to do them anymore, because this is the name of the game. And all you've got to keep in your mind is, how does it begin? It begins by staying away from the first drink. Now, you're going to say to me, how do I do that? How do I do that? You've done it before. You've done it before. We all have done it before. There's always been a day or an hour or an afternoon where we stayed away from the first drink. Somebody or something kept us away from the first drink. And that's all I'm saying to you. Get it first in your mind, and then we'll move on to this next thing about sobriety being an end in itself. Get it first in your mind that you stay away from the first drink. That's it. That's where it begins. That's why you walk through the door tonight. And I don't care anything else you do. You don't have to be virtuous in order to do this. You see, generally we get you confused an awful lot of times. You come in here, we can find alcoholism for you, we tell you got a disease, we tell you got to find a higher power, we tell you got to work 12 steps, that's what it means, you got to go do this and do this, and pretty soon you think, my God, where can I get out the incense and the candles and let's go? See? But you don't have to do any of this, ladies and gentlemen. You just have to stay away from the goddamn first drink. That is what you do. Now, do anything else. Kick your wife, your husband, beat the kids, yell at the dog, tell your boss you're resigning. Screw up your life however you want to, but don't take the first drink. Now, if that isn't clear, I don't know what else I can do. Now, if that's how you do it, then that's what makes it an end in itself. All comparisons are odious. All analogies never quite fit. But let me try to make it, put it in another frame. Let us suppose that instead of alcoholism, you have diabetes. The two are not too far apart. And you go to a doctor, and you're examined, and the tests are taken, and then he comes in and he says, well, I'm sorry to tell you, Joe, you have diabetes. And as you know, you can die of diabetes. It can be a very, very serious disease, Joe. But you don't need to worry too much, because there's a substance called insulin. And if you take it regularly, as I'm going to describe it to you, you will be able to live a normal life. And that, by leading a normal life, Joe, I mean you will be able to come and go. You will enjoy normal health. You will be able to earn a living and do all the other things that normal health means. And you go away with your little insulin pills or your syringe, whichever way you can be given at both farms. And after a while, you come back to the doctor and you say, doctor, I have decided not to take the insulin anymore. And the doctor says, why? And you said, well, because I've been taking it regularly now. I take it just exactly the way you prescribe. But my wife doesn't treat me any better than she used to. I still have the same trouble with my boss. He's still a son of a bitch. My kids are driving me crazy. The taxes are too high. I think I'll sign a recall petition on radio. Over and over and over. Nothing has changed, doctor. Nothing has changed. So why the hell should I take the insulin? And then the doctor patiently says, Joe, you take the insulin because that way you live. that way you live. And this, for the alcoholic, whether you like it or not, you stay away from the first drink because that way you live. Now, does that mean that what I'm saying to you now is that if you continue to drink tonight, that you will die tonight? No. Too bad, maybe in a way that it isn't that way. Because my experience with progressive alcoholism is that it is fatal. But long before you die physically, everything that makes life worth living dies. Long, long before you die physically. And over in the almost 16 years that I've been in this fellowship, I have had the unfortunate, sad experience of seeing many of the friends that were very close to me and whom I knew very well, that came in here and then left, and they are still drinking, and they are dying by inches. But they have lost everything that makes life worth living. So you don't just walk off and die. But it is still life. It is also one other thing that I would like you to think about, because this is the way it finally came to me. Every human being, somewhere in his life, sometime in his life, somewhere in his life, is going to have, if he is ever going to grow up emotionally, if he is ever going to accept life on its terms, if he is ever going to face and recognize reality, then he is going to have to take a stand somewhere. He is going to have to put his feet down. And what in marketing you call it positioning the product. I use that term because I happen to know about it. Engineering probably has something, another term that would describe it. For an alcoholic, there's a wonderful way if you've been on the run all your life, and you have if you're an alcoholic. Here is one way where you can take a stand. It's so clear cut. A lot of non-alcoholics, just as driven, just as neurotic, just as bugged, just as sure that there's no way out, they don't have a clear cut, a place that they can put their feet down and take a stand. But you do, just as I did, and as I did one night. I put my feet down, and I said, here I will stand. Here I will stand, not take the first drink no matter what. I will expect nothing for it. I don't give a damn whether things are good or bad, whether I keep my job or lose my job, whether people hate me or love me, whether I finally flip my wig and really go insane, and the boys in the little white jackets finally come and get me and take me away. At least, my God, I don't know where I am going and who is taking me. And I put my feet down, and I said, not to God. There were no tears, there were no prayers. You don't need them. You don't need them to do this. You can do it yourself. You can put your feet down and say, I may die here, I may collapse here, I may go crazy here, I may flip my rig here, but from this spot I will not retreat. You can do it. I did it. Thousands of others have done it. And until you do it, you don't move forward. You don't move forward. You keep moving backwards. Now, if you have now come to the conclusion that sobriety for an alcoholic is an end in itself, if you have to quit thinking about it, apart from virtue, it has nothing to do with virtue if you're an alcoholic. It has nothing to do with a reward. It has nothing to do with fringe benefits and dividends, those phrases that we talk about like confetti in AA. It has nothing to do with it at all. The answer to the question for the alcoholic, what is the point of sobriety? The answer is, for the alcoholic, the point of sobriety is life. It is as simple, it is as fundamental, and it is as all-encompassing as that. That's the answer to that question. What is the point of sobriety? And as your days in AA lengthen, you will might often hear, remember what I'm telling you are only my opinions, but I am telling them to you very vehemently because they are my vehement opinions. I don't have any mild opinions. You will hear a phrase, as I heard it, You will hear two. Let me. You don't hear this other one so much anymore, but I sure heard it, because, well, see, AA as a fellowship has only been in existence as an organization about 30 years. And I've been around 15 of those, so I got in, we might call, what was called the early part of the game. And when I got into AA, if you still had your own teeth, you were looked upon with a little bit of suspicion. Maybe you hadn't suffered enough. So the thing that you used to hear then, and maybe you still heard quite a lot, but fingers used to be pointed at you and you were told, staying sober is your number one problem. Now, can you imagine how that sounds to the new country? Staying sober, Buster, is your number one problem. What you're saying to yourself when I say that, I'm glad you're, is, if you've got a couple of hours, Joe, just like I used to, when Eddie Boland and Sully and Eddie Regan and everybody else were sticking their fingers in my chest and saying, listen, staying sober is your number one problem. And I'm dying to say, because I didn't want to disbelieve such a thing, I'm dying to say, why, you dumb funny, come out into the parking lot of the 6300 Club and give me a couple of hours, and I'll tell you what a few of my number one problems are. I'll outline them for you. But they were telling me the truth, because, you see, I was an alcoholic, and I am an alcoholic. And it's true that sobriety, the point of sobriety is life for the alcoholic. Now, the other things you hear, and this doesn't quite infuriate you as much as the other one. Sometimes it has a kind of a wonderful, spiritual, noble ring about it. Generally it's said with a far-off look in the eyes, the head tilted up a little bit towards heaven, and somebody says, for me, sobriety alone is not enough. And then everybody kind of, and they wait for all of the recital, all of the blessings that has to accompany this person's sobriety in order to make it worthwhile. Now, fine and dandy, I think that's great. If I said this is a fellowship, wonderful fellowship, where everybody can believe what he wants to. All I'm saying is, if sobriety alone is not enough, and all these blessings disappear, as they have a terrific way of coming and going, I tell you from 15 years experience, they sometimes just aren't there at all. And no AA program can guarantee you that they will be there. Sometimes they are so absent that you wonder why you ever started on this at all. So all I know is, if sobriety alone is not enough, on those days when the sky is dark and you are looking in the mirror and you realize that you are not one whit different than you were several years ago, and these blessings that you thought you had were really wishful thinking, these virtues that you thought you had possessed were kind of being worn as a cloak in order to impress others and win for you the self-approval that you had been thirsting for all of your natural life, then what do you do? Sobriety sure as hell better be enough at that moment, or you will drink again. And you will say the fatal word. What the hell is the point of sobriety? That's the first question. I hope I've answered it. And now I will, for the rest of the session, hope that I can answer some questions of yours. We've got 35 minutes. Don't tell me I silenced you that much. Yes. The question man asked was, when I was taking a pill and the booze, I've had power, right? And I cope with reality. Now I'm sober and I'm afraid to lick postage stamps. Will there come a time when, in sobriety, when I will have the same power to cope with reality that I have when I am full of booze and pills? All right, I'll try to answer that. If you were really had power in coping with reality that you were coping with, you wouldn't have needed pills or foods. There was a gnawing fear inside of you that made you take pills and booze like it did with all the rest of us. We didn't take them because, you know, we thought that it was just a real rah-rah thing to do. You don't. You see, if you're a very well, normal, well-adjusted person coping with reality and having a lot of power and getting along fine, you simply don't drink or feel yourself to death. You don't have to come to an AA meeting. So the fear that you are now feeling sober, you are feeling because the things you were doing to hide it are absent. And part the whole thing that AA tries to do, and the whole goal of our therapy is to, and this is the thing we will examine in the next session, is to change the thinking, change the emotion, change the whole complex that has produced the fear and that is now besetting you. So the answer is, if you are willing to put forth the effort required, if you are willing to do the things that have to be done, then the answer to your question is yes. There does come a day, and sooner than you think, when sober you are able to do what you had to get drunk to do before. And since you are doing them sober, you will do them a lot better. What's that most wonderful about it? You will remember doing them. Define that term, peer group, are you wrong?
I can just say,
you know,
in other words,
it's easy to
drink
yourself and
leave because you're there for a single purpose.
Yeah.
But casual drinking, I get
a
complete,
you mean when you're going out in non-AA surroundings? Is that what you're talking about?
Just AA together
for the purpose.
Just getting, you know, getting a casual
meeting. Do you feel ill at
ease?
Well, as we go along here, and you know this, Al, we've talked about it, you and I together, the reason we all felt ill at ease sober at first is because we used to always feel ill at ease sober. So we got drunk in order that we wouldn't feel ill at ease sober. That's why we drank. We felt ill at ease sober. We didn't know how to cope with what we thought was reality without some kind of aid. We did not know how to stand there as ourselves without a glass in our hand that would just make us witty, charming, intelligent, or brave, or sexy, or whatever we wanted to be on that particular night, or day, or afternoon. So that's why we drank. So naturally, when this artificial aid is removed, until we finally come to know ourselves well enough that we can accept ourselves, indeed can learn to have what the psychologists and the psychiatrists and the philosophers regard as the ultimate, and that is plain self-esteem. Self-esteem, self-acceptance, at least the self-esteem, then there is no, we're not uncomfortable no matter what group we're in. And there is I'll tell you how uncomfortable I was sober, and that's strange too, you see, because I, up until the last 2 years of my drinking, I was not a daily drinker, I was a periodic drinker. I didn't know I was periodic, I never heard that phrase until I came to AA. I just drank when I couldn't stay sober. And then I stayed sober as long as I could. And when I couldn't stay sober any longer, I drank again, see? But after the last 2 years of my drinking, I drank pretty steadily. The periods became common, and the stomach became common. But I used to stand outside AA meeting, or sit in the car, and think, oh God, do I have to go in? and put on that face and say hello, you know, and everybody say hello, you know. And
I hate it.
Now, I don't know why, because I was able to go to work, because see, I used to go to work a lot of times sober. But God damn it, I never went to AA meeting sober. It was meeting, it's a very strange thing, and as a matter of fact, it took a long time for me to believe that AA was real. That's why I came in and I pretended I performed. You see, I was the sober if I get group. And God knows it wasn't because I was young and hadn't been around long enough to lose a few things. And it was simply because all I wanted was something very simple, very forthright, very direct. I said to myself, way down deep here inside, I said, I will stay sober if I get Tana. That was all I wanted. But I wanted it while I was alive and could enjoy it. And I would have preferred it by acclamation. Well, it didn't come. It did not come. And so when it did come, then I said the fatal word, what the hell is the point of sobriety? What the hell is the point of doing all this? Dragging myself to those meetings. Making these rough step calls on these dirty, smelly, lousy drunks. Listen to the crap that I have to listen to. Smile at all those jerks. And I don't become a saint. What the hell is the point of this? The hell with it. And I left. I resigned. So it's very, very, it's quite natural to feel uncomfortable, whether you're the peer group or not. The most exciting thing about this is, to me, once you accept this, you know, let me put it to you another way. Every art, every science, every philosophy has a basic premise upon which the whole structure, the superstructure, the rest of the structure rests. There's a Latin phrase that describes it. It is called the sine qua non. And the literal translation of that phrase is, without which, nothing else. Now, there is a sine qua non for recovery from alcoholism, in my opinion. And it is the fact that sobriety is an end in itself. Whether it gets you anything, whether you feel comfortable or uncomfortable, sad or glad, afraid or brave, full of despair or full of hope, holy or bad, sinful or virtuous, chaste or unchaste, sobriety for the alcoholic is an end in itself. That is the fundamental requisite for recovery from this disease. Until you have that, you can stay sober for years, ladies and gentlemen, and all you are doing, in effect, in my opinion, is postponing a drug. I have seen it happen again and again. Any other questions? Resentment with what? How long have you been sober? 16 days. Go ahead and have resentment. Come back again to what I told you. You see, we give it to you so fast. Just stay away from the first thing. If you want to hate a few people, go ahead and hate them. You see, you do not have to be virtuous in order to stay sober. Now, as you go along, you will find, as all of us said, that having resentment are uncomfortable. Not to the person you resent, but to you. But all you need to do, you see, and if you say to your teeth, you put it like this, I've got to get rid of these resentments or I'll get drunk. You will get drunk, but because you won't get rid of the resentments. So go ahead and have the resentments for a while. Stay away from first drinking. Anything else?
Well, I'm more or less the reverse. I'm 14 days. And I'm enjoying I love the meetings, I like courses, I like the people. I like sitting in the front row because my sponsor said I have to. For sure, because how long is this duty going
to be? See, Even the alcoholic, you see, you can't win. There's one who's worried because he hates everybody, and there's one who's worried because he likes everybody. And this is the name of the game. See, this is the name of the game. The answer for you is exactly the answer that I gave him. If you are feeling good, enjoy it. Enjoy it. Don't question it. It'll go away in time. Yes, you better. Put it on tape and Technicolor if you can, because you'll need it. You'll need it. You'll need it. Yes.
I feel like a beginner all of a sudden tonight. I something new has happened to me in my sobriety in the last couple of days. In fact, just yesterday, I had two lifelong ambitions. One was a material thing, and the other, well, was a certain kind of motorcycle. The other was to play jazz in a jazz joint. I am a musician. I mean, a high class jazz joint. There are only two of them now. I did it Tuesday night. I played, you know. And I've got the motorcycle that I've always wanted all my life. And it doesn't get it. Neither one of them gets it. And I have the feeling that there's this, you know, growth that nothing outside is going to get it anymore. Okay, when do I get it inside?
But, Chick, you always have to open the door before you go through it. And when you have opened the door, as you just have, of discovering that material things, our status, playing a jazz joint or owning a motorcycle, does not of themselves bring you happiness, then you have opened the door into getting it inside. Now you will go through that door. But you've already started. I have found in my life that the questions that are uppermost in your mind at any given time, and this is going to sound very philosophical and mystical, and it shouldn't at all, because it's really a fact. The questions that are bugging you are always in the process of being answered in your daily life, or they would not be bugging you. And pretty soon we find that you have worked through to the answer. And if you can keep that, one of the most encouraging things, the most sustaining things that I have ever, it's dawned on me. I've never read this anywhere, so I don't know whether I could be supported by this at all, in this at all in anywhere, but I've found this from my own experience, that things that keep coming back in my mind, bugging the daylights out of me, after a while I find out I have been living the answer. The answer has been coming out of this turmoil. And that's why the questions have been bugging me. This is what's happened to you. Anybody else? Yes? Let's have another question. Come on. We've got time to go here. It's precious. You may never have me again. Is a spiritual experience necessary in order to maintain sobriety? The third week, the question we'll ask and kick around here in our workshop will be, what are the old ideas and how do you let go of them? And fourth, the fourth week will be, after the old ideas, what? Those are the four questions. Okay. Any other questions? You want to adjourn early and get an extra cup of coffee? No? Well, all right, a few more minutes. And be sure, I'd like for you to bring in these written questions next week. And I guarantee you that if they are capable of being read from the podium, I will try to answer them. Again, let's get back to the newcomer. Once more, I want to spell it out to you. Because this is what really happens. You see, you come in here, the one thing that you're sure of is that life is pretty grim, and that you are pretty grim. You don't admit this, but some of you do. I was shouting from the housetop because I was convinced of it, so I thought it should be shouted. And finally, I realized that my drinking toward the end was merely to confirm my opinion of myself and to make it better so that I could really say, stand in front of the whole world and say, you see, I always told you I was rotten, so here I am, see? Now, you come in here, life's pretty grim, and then we start talking to you, and we say, in my opinion, we get the cart before the horse. We start telling you that life can be beautiful. You don't believe it. And you think, well, this is an act, like I did when I first came. You see, my first reaction to AA was that it really wasn't real. I didn't know that at the time. I just thought, I felt uncomfortable. I felt uncomfortable as hell. But I realized later, when I looked back, that one of the big reasons I felt uncomfortable was I didn't believe in any of it. I didn't believe the people were real. And certainly I didn't believe that what I was hearing was real. I read the book. But I didn't have any quarrel with it. I thought it was completely sound. And I think that the confusion persists because we begin to talk to you so often about things that can only begin to make sense to you after you have had a certain period of sobriety. After you have stayed away from the first thing for a certain length of time. Now, I know this is an insult to your intelligence. You think, well, what the hell is that? I can go to work, I earn a living, I mean, that's all very well and good. Earning a living, driving a car, and all these things that you've done over the years while you've been drinking, making money, paying the bills, or not, but let's say that you have. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about these other things that will come clear to you as sobriety, because what we're talking to you about, that it takes a little bit of sobriety, is to begin to try to, you just start beginning to be willing to look at something you have never looked at before in your life, and that is yourself. You have thought you have looked at yourself because you have been absolutely preoccupied with yourself. You have been sick with self-centeredness, but you've only been concerned about yourself. You have not looked at yourself. You have not examined yourself. You have not come to grips with yourself. And that takes a little time. And that's why I don't want to talk about that tonight. Why I would like to spell out this fundamental thing. I wish I could spell it out in this detail every meeting, but it would take too much time. Stay away from the first drink. The point of sobriety is life itself. Then after that, once that condition is fulfilled, and fulfilled for itself alone, you don't fulfill it in order to see if these other things will come. You fulfill it only if you wish to keep alive. If you don't wish to live, then drink. The death will be a long time coming. It will be very messy. But if you wish to live, then stay away from the first drink. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. I hope that I have helped some of you. I hope to see you again next week. God bless you.